Are you just doing this as a commodity product, or are you doing it to actually make a difference?
Hello, and welcome back to The Food Fix, the show where I talk to lots of different folks about innovative ways to better feed the world. I'm Anna Leonis, your host, and over the past few months, I've embraced the world of food and all its intricacies. There's so much to learn, and I've just barely scraped the surface with this show. But there are some food pioneers that have been in the game of food solutions for decades. Today's guest is one of those people. He began his journey in his grandmother's kitchen, traveled to India learning their cuisine, owned a famous Metro Detroit restaurant, was involved in farmers markets across the nation, worked as a consultant and researcher for many major companies, including Garden Fresh and Campbell's, and now owns two plant-based food businesses. This week, I talked to the incredible George Voutitakis about his lifelong journey as a food fixer. There's a lot to cover for you.
Well, yeah, there's a mouthful for sure.
I want to start with In Season Cafe. So that was when you were in Detroit working in this vegetarian restaurant.
Yeah, and the vegetarian restaurant, you know, it's considered by many to be an iconic place because it really helped define what vegetarian and plant-based food could be in lifestyle. We had customers coming, driving 2 hours for dinner. We had 4-hour waits at times. I mean, it was just a place where 90% of our customers weren't vegetarian, but everybody was there just to enjoy the food because it was good. And, you know, one of the reasons behind that was we were farm to table. We worked with local farmers. We really appreciated the dynamics, the unique dynamics of the Detroit area with our, you know, incredible variety and diversity in different kinds of cuisines and cultures. We have a lot to draw on, and we're really fortunate that way. It's like we have the world at our fingertips here.
And you were farm to table a lot earlier than most restaurants were. When were you farm to table?
1981, right off the bat. You know, it was always a passion of mine, you know, with my Greek American upbringing and the experience of going to Greece and seeing seasonal foods and going to the markets and learning from my grandmother and my relatives there at an early age, along with learning how to cook in India, which is a unique experience in itself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the main takeaways from those experiences was that food is a language. Food is something that is not only nourishing, but it's nurturing as well. It actually brings people together in community, and it's really powerful in how it works that way. And it's built into the Greek culture, it's built into the Indian culture, and it's something that we experience here in the Detroit area just by, you know, participating and supporting the local venues that provide glimpses of those cultures here. Mm-hmm. So we tried to pull all that together with In Season Cafe. And, you know, so for us, it wasn't about the message of being vegetarian. Yeah, we were dedicated vegetarian, vegan. But it was about the food. The food spoke for itself. We felt that, you know, if we made it delicious, if we respected the traditional methods of preparation, if we sourced every ingredient as if, you know, knowing what it was, that it was unadulterated, that it was in the best possible ingredient, often directly from the farm, then, you know, it would make a difference. And I think it has. And that kind of philosophy has made a difference in the food world across the board when chefs embrace those kind of principles.
You were probably one of the first exposures to a lot of people for vegetarian food and the concept that it can be so delicious.
And I think it made a difference. You know, we had people moving into the community just as a quality of life issue. So they moved nearby the restaurant so they could eat there. We did cooking classes and we participated in the community. I actually sponsored farmers at the Royal Oak Farmers Market back in 1990. We had the in-season organic growers booth, so we brought in a few organic farmers. There were no organic farmers at the farmers markets at that time. And, you know, we started working with them directly, making sure we bought and we used mostly the produce that comes out of the farms. And at the same time, we encouraged and put the word out that people should go shop there. People really got a sense of what a functional market-based lifestyle could be. We are so used to going to the grocery store and getting packaged food or something that's been part of the food chain, like iceberg lettuce is 5 weeks from harvest to the time it goes into the store and then sits on the shelf in the store for how long. But we have these unique opportunities of participating in local communities, supporting the local farmers who are the hardest working people I know. I mean, just amazing dedication. And we think, you know, I experienced the restaurant business, which is difficult enough, but really had a lot of respect for the people who had put their fingers in the earth and really brought the food to us. And being able to go to a market and to buy the produce and meet the farmers, for one, that's another connection with the food. But also to buy the food and it's still, you know, fresh picked that morning. I mean, the farmers are up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning picking the produce. And, you know, you have the dew still on the produce. And it's like this kiss of sweetness. There's this amazing difference in quality when you buy it directly from the farmer at the farmer's market.
And you did a lot of work in not only Royal Oak farmers markets, but Detroit farmers markets. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, I worked a lot with Eastern Market over the years with Dan Carmody and his team, trying to bring awareness in the Detroit urban farm community. The main thing, you know, I was in a position to support them, whether I was in the restaurant or I was at Garden Fresh or even at Campbell's.
Yes, you heard him right. Campbell's and Garden Fresh. And we will come back to that later.
I could actually leverage the network I was in and just bring attention to it. And I think that, if nothing else, that helps to put it into people's minds. Well, this is something I should do. This is something that I can participate in. Doesn't mean I have to change my lifestyle. Just go to the market and support the farmers.
You also went to San Diego and saw those farmers markets. And that's one of the most plentiful farmers markets in the country, right?
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, and there's some amazing, and California just has amazing farmers markets, mm-hmm. you know, LA and San Francisco too. And I've been to a lot of those, but San Diego was unique. You know, I sold the restaurant mm-hmm. in 2002.
Okay.
And we moved in 2004, we moved the entire family, you know, both sets of parents and everybody to California. We had a little two houses on the end of a cul-de-sac and we had an orchard and it was very nice. You know, we had avocados and oranges and things you can do in San Diego and in Michigan. It's like we dream of those things, right? One of the things for me was being participating in the local community there and experiencing the farmers markets. And, you know, there's, I think at the time there were 56 farmers markets in San Diego County and you could go to a different market every day and shop every day, which is what I did. It was a luxury. I could pick and choose. But, you know, San Diego County also has per capita the most organic farms in the United States and you know, over 2,000 organic farms in the county. And it's really a wonderful community there. But, you know, they have their challenges too. 97% of the citrus fruit that was available in stores in San Diego County came from South America or somewhere else. And here you had orange trees in everybody's yards, right? And you had all these orchards and, you know, you had avocados grown there. I mean, there was an abundance locally, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that abundance, because of the economics, is supported by the local community. We have that same issue in Michigan. I worked with the Michigan Organic Farmers Group. Actually, they used to have meetings at my restaurant. One of the things that was really apparent was that, you know, we have this incredible harvest of beans. I mean, the soil in Michigan for beans and grains is one of the best soil areas in the entire world for this. You know, a lot of the high protein soybeans that go to Japan are grown here in Michigan. And so over 90% of the crop that is grown in Michigan goes to either Europe or Japan. It doesn't stay here. And because the market's not here.
Does that mean that we're outsourcing for our beans then? Like California is with their fruit? We just don't value the things we grow ourselves?
A lot of times, you know, what we discovered when I was working at Garden Fresh, and we were looking at really developing a community, a manufacturing community based around Michigan products, realized when we saw the numbers, I was working with the state of Michigan on that too. We were number 5 in agriculture in the United States, but we were number 27th in food manufacturing. So yes, a lot of our ingredients go out of state. And yes, we import from other states a lot of things, you know. And at one time, we had infrastructure for more of a local-based economy. We had this incredible market systems, some of the oldest in the country, dating back to 1841, actually. Eastern Market, as it is, dates back to 1891. We had this amazing history, but just like what happened with the auto industry and with manufacturing, I mean, this is the largest industrial base in the country, basically, is that efficiencies and scale and all these choices that big companies make to reach a lot more people, you got to give them credit for that because, you know, the scale helps with hunger, it helps with access, it helps with a lot of things. But on the other hand, a lot of the trade-offs are giving up the standards, people ending up not knowing what the difference is between a fresh picked vegetable and something that's been in storage for weeks at a time.
I definitely have trouble with that. At the grocery store, I check the labels to see when food will go bad, but I don't normally look where it was grown or even think about how long it's taken to get from the farm to the store.
Stepping down from the high level, when you go down to the ground level, you know, it all comes down to the soil. It all comes down to the nutrients in the earth that we're putting into our food. And that's why I also encourage everyone, and I've always done it, is to have a personal garden, just to experience it. There's something about getting your fingers in the earth yourself and relaxing, calming, meditative. And the relationship you have with these plants, this life that comes and gives back. It's just incredible to experience.
I love the connection that you have with food. Where did that start? Was it at a young age? You mentioned heritage.
Well, of course, my Greek grandmother was very influential, and I'd hang out in the kitchen and she'd set things up for me to steal if I wanted them, like little spanakopitas on the counter and things like that. But, you know, that was very influential, but it was just the gathering and the understanding and the appreciation that food is a method of expression, is a common bond. It's the glue of every great culture. Being brought up with that and then going to India and experiencing small regional communities, it was just incredible. And that's where I really, when I went to India, is where I really started to appreciate cooking and the food and learning at that point. I never went to school for cooking. I always share this with people that it's really important to understand the mindset of the cook you're learning from. You know, anybody can do a recipe. What goes into it, what the thought process is, what you're envisioning and what you're manifesting. And then being familiar with the ingredients, being in touch with where the ingredients come from. Everything has a source and everything has a plot of land that it comes from. And that extends that consideration and that learning process.
So speaking of growing and innovating food, you worked at Garden Fresh. That was the start of your kind of corporate?
I had, when I had the restaurant, we were working for, you know, doing events. And I met Jack Aronson at a farmer's market.
Jack Aronson was the founder of Garden Fresh.
Where I was selling my book, I was on a book tour back in Michigan. And then he invited me by to see his operation. And I started consulting for him. And next thing you know, I became director of R&D. We hit it off and I worked with him side by side for 4 years. And he was an incredible mentor for learning about the consumer packaged goods industry, with Garden Fresh being the largest salsa manufacturer in the world at that time, fresh salsa. We ended up working with HPP, which is the high pressure processing, which is an incredible technology because through pressure and the release of the pressure, which actually sort of changes the food, keeps it intact, keeps the nutritional profile intact, keeps the sensory profile intact, and makes it so we could make fresh salsa that lasted 100 days. And so we ended up shipping to Korea, Japan, to Europe. It was really fantastic to be part of an organization that was really applying these new technological abilities to the food system in a way that preserves the history and the integrity of the food, rather than just putting everything in a can and cooking it until it gets to a certain point. And I mean, that has its merits too, but it definitely is a few steps away from what we would normally consider as fresh food.
Did you bring your background of organic and local sourcing to that?
Yeah, I introduced the organic program, salsa program at Garden Fresh, and I was able to work with companies like Whole Foods and Kroger and Safeway and Walmart and, you know, a lot of different big retailers. I could go into any grocery store in the country at that time and pretty much see products that I had touched in some way or developed.
What was something that you learned from working in that corporate setting?
In the restaurant business, I was reaching thousands every week, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 customers a week. When I got to Garden Fresh, every week we reached 2 to 3 million people. I mean, the scale was just incredible. And yes, I was, you know, with bringing on the organic program, I also was able to bring on and develop a supply chain that was centered around organic farms rather than just organic commodities. This wasn't a regular corporate job from the point of view is that, you know, the Aronson family owned Garden Fresh. And Jack was a visionary in the food business. It happened because of his tenacity and his vision. And we had a great partnership because I was the one who made that, you know, his vision happen at the same time, adding things that I brought to the table. And together we came up with a lot of things as well. Some of the projects I worked on, I've seen some products like that in the stores. That I said, oh yeah, I was working on this a few years ago, and it's nice, it's great to see somebody's actually doing this. So there are really great inroads being made in the food space. I think the challenge is to maintain the line of sight. Are you just doing this as a commodity product, or are you doing it to actually make a difference? Fulfilling a need and for food experience in the culture?
But when you were bought by Campbell's and they still were kind of testing the waters with the fresh food, did you maintain that same role of research and innovation in the fresh food and organic space?
Yes. I mean, I was also working on programs like I had a relationship with Deepak Chopra and I brought him in. We were working on Ayurvedic food and we were using the new technologies that we had available at Campbell's to develop a line of Ayurvedically inspired products that were going to allow access to those kind of foods to the general public, which was a really, you know, an amazing project. It was, you know, it was ambitious and it didn't really manifest in the end because of the change in directions in Campbell's. But those are the kind of things I worked on. And a lot of that was because of the leadership. My partner in the Plantasia Foods is Carlos Barroso, who is a global VP of R&D at Campbell's.
We will hear more about Plantasia and Carlos later.
Incredible people in these organizations.
So now what are you up to? What have you been working on?
I have Plantasia Foods, and that's our plant-based protein company. Our first product's a burger that is gluten-free, soy-free, non-GMO. It's built around a pea protein matrix, but I use culinary ingredients in it to make a difference with how the taste is and also how you feel about it the next day. For me, food memories are important. So, you know, the burgers can be microwaved in 60 seconds. So it's great for dorm rooms. It's great for, and we're getting a lot of traction with universities now with that. And it's good for the convenience market. It's cooked ahead of time. So it's going to be perfectly cooked every time you experience it. When I formulated it, I approached it like a chef where I just wanted to make a good burger rather than trying to make it taste like meat. And I think that was important. And I think that's sort of the next step in what plant-based is going to be, is just focusing on something that's good and you feel good about it too. So I have another company too. I have a mayonnaise company and a dressing company. We manufacture in Northern Ireland. It came out of a relationship I had started when I was at Garden Fresh. And mayonnaise is sort of the national condiment of Ireland. It's a passion there that you don't find here. Yes, there's mayonnaise people here, but not like there. And so what we have is we have a product that is, you know, by law non-GMO because it's manufactured in the UK. So as a matter of fact, we beat animal like egg-based mayonnaise in tastings all the time. So what we have restaurants using our product as their only mayonnaise, and not even telling their customers it's vegan or plant-based. But if it comes up, they cover all the bases and they really can have more of a worry-free menu, as well as more access for people who have dietary restrictions, allergens. Dairy allergies is a huge thing. So it's not just about being vegan or plant-based. It's also about, you know, being able to satisfy the needs of what people are really dealing with on their day-to-day lives.
I always wondered why they called it plant-based foods, because aren't plants just foods inherently? So it's kind of funny that the movement was given this name, but I wonder that through the evolution of all these new plant-based materials and foods, if it'll just become a regular part of food and people won't have to label it as separate or other.
You're absolutely right about that. It's, you know, it's, we're at the point of normalizing things. I think one of the bigger challenges is, and we've made a lot of headway in this regard, but one of the bigger challenges is getting away of the stigma that animal-based foods are important for health. That's what you should be eating. Whereas the reality is, no, if you look at history, that's not what people ate. Even the Romans, you know, the word frugus, which is the root of the word frugal, was the name they used for their midday meal. And usually it was plant-based. There's so much to look at. There's so much to appreciate from those little tidbits of history that we have with the food, where we can really understand that, well, wait a second, we need to have a closer relationship with the earth around us. We need to have a way that not only we source from that, but we're in touch with it. And again, I go back to the markets. I go back to getting to know people who actually put their fingers in the soil and have those connections, because otherwise it becomes less and less important. But the reality is, the more you focus on that kind of thing, the more your life is enriched.
And thank you so much for doing this.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you guys sticking with me through this long episode, but it was great to hear about George's interesting, inspiring life in food, and I really hope you enjoyed learning about him as much as I did. Big thanks to him for joining us. Make sure to check out his plant-based companies. They're both linked in the podcast description. Thank you, Freezer Bees, and thank you, Night Center. Folks, this is my second-to-last episode before I graduate from Michigan State and go out in the real world and find myself a real job. Though none could ever compare to this gig. But I do have something to ask of you. Whether you've been a longtime food fixer or this is your first episode, I invite all of you to send me an email at msufoodfix@gmail.com asking one question you have about food, food systems, food companies, food production, a question maybe raised in a past episode, truly anything to do with food, and I will answer it. I'd love to get my listeners' perspectives to close off my time on the Food Fix. All right, do your assigned homework, and I will catch you next time. I've been your host, Anna Leonis. Should I wonder what's this all about? And should I cry a little? Or build a